Brew Strong is brought to you by Blickman Engineering, home of the top-tier brewing stand. Visit them online at blickmanengineering.com.
Brewers, it's time for the beer radio you've been looking for. This is the show that dispels myths, tackles the toughest topics, and makes no apologies for geeking out on beer. Hosted by two guys that drink before they think, Jamil Zainashev and John Palmer. This is Brew Strong.
Hey, howdy, hey, my brewing brothers and sisters.
Greetings, cretins.
We're back for another show. For those of you who were listening to the previous show and still hanging out, we were talking about staling and all that, and we may still have some questions from the chat. Just hang in there and get through our intro, and then we'll get to those questions. And then it's all open Q&A. And by open Q&A, we mean... Since we could take phone calls. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, you want to do it?
Screen phone calls.
Okay. Yeah. 888-401-2337.
But we'll hang up on you if you seem to be like wildly off topic. otherwise, you know, you go ahead and send in an email to brewstrong@thebrewingnetwork.com. And we get all those emails. You get an automated response because we can't reply to those. But... if you have a question for Q&A, just put Q&A in the subject, and we'll get to them on the show. If you have, like a show idea, you put show idea, or if you are selling, condos in the Bahamas, just list spam in the title. Speaking of which, selling condos in the Bahamas, I think Blickman would do really well selling condos in the Bahamas. They'd be really nice condos, really well-made. They'd have all sorts of amazing
robot
features,
waiters.
Robot waiters. The toilet would, clean itself.
Yeah, but could you live in a stainless condo?
I could live in stainless condo.
You think so? It'd be real hot.
They'd be always, stainless. They'd be shiny. It would look really cool. Yes, Blickman Engineering, BlickmanEngineering.com. Check them out. Blickman with two N's. They
and a CH.
And a CH. And a B.
Mm-hmm.
And an M.
Yeah.
They sponsor the show.
And a little bit of ick, too.
A little bit of ick.
Just a touch of the ick.
Touch of the ick. Oh, Palmer, you've been drinking. They sponsor the show. They pay for the show, so you don't have to. And I think that's a very generous thing that Blickman Engineering does for the homebrew community. And if you find the show is worth your time, take a little bit of your time and send an email to John at Blickman Engineering. Go to the website, check it out. You can get an email link there, and send them an email. Tell them you appreciate it. If you do nothing else, just do that and just say, hey, thanks for taking care of that for us so we can enjoy the show. Because if he didn't pay for it, I'm not sure the show would still be worthwhile, still be going. There are costs associated with this. And
but it's worth it for us.
Yeah. Justin's
Justin's vacation fund.
Cocaine and vacation and hookers and blow.
Corn dogs
and all that, yeah.
Corn dogs. I mean veal corn dogs.
Veal corn dogs,
that dude eats great. I eat Top Ramen. He has it reversed.
That's right. He's no longer on the Top Ramen train here.
He's on the Bottom Ramen.
The Bottom Ramen. Oh, Jesus.
All right, that's the show today, guys.
Well, and what I neglected to cover in last show was something that you don't know about my good friend John Palmer.
What is this?
I need theme music for this.
Theme music? What kind of music?
Somebody needs to come up with theme music for this.
What kind of music?
What you don't know about my friend?
Like dramatic intro music?
No, I think it would be more like. Mayberry RFD type of music. A little Opie and Andy. A little bit of that kind of thing, I think. You know, because when I think of my friend John Palmer, I think Mayberry RFD. Or Mayberry, Michigan.
These hands are lethal weapons.
There you go. Now we're talking. What you don't know about my friend John Palmer. In college, his nickname was Pitching Machine. Pitching Machine. All right. What you don't know about my friend John Palmer. Woo-hoo-hoo! All right. Let's get right to it. You still got a question from the chat from last show?
I do, but now I got to get back into the chat because it's a stupid program. Nothing from last show, actually. They're all kind of carrying over to this show.
Oh, okay.
But I do have like 6 questions from the chat already.
All right. Read us one.
I will. Is West Coast Red, which I guess would be an RPA, I don't know, whatever that is, is that a recognized style? Kind of like a CDA or Black IPA has become recognized.
You know, and
should us East Coasties just call it a fad?
No. So here's the thing. I mentioned this years ago. Gordon and I were going over styles and things like that when we were working on the Brewing Classic Styles. I'm like, you know, there's a whole different West Coast. You know, the whole amber ale in the style guide does not in any way encompass what is happening out here on the West Coast with red ales. It's like, well, you know, they kind of fall into, you know, barley wine or, you know, IPA or something. They consider Sierra Nevada Celebration an IPA. That's not an IPA. Come on. You know, it's got, that was like dark red. It's, you know, things like, you know, Ballast Point's Calico Amber, an awesome beer, Shark Bite, you know, from Pizza Port. We got a Canyon Brewett coming up on that. JP mm-hmm. did a nice interview with him, Jeff Bagby. And we've got, you know...
Red Nectar.
We got Green Flash's Red. I mean, you know, there's a number of them, and they're just these wonderful... We've got Heretic Evil Twin.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Self-promotion right there. You know, it's really a completely different beast. It doesn't fall into the other categories. And the interesting thing is, I get a lot of people that are like, you know, I brewed your West Coast Blaster out of Brewing Classic Styles. You know, what should I enter it as? I'm like, well, you know, where are you entering it? If you're entering on the West Coast, yeah, just enter it as an amber. If you're entering it somewhere else, maybe you enter it as a specialty. So that was around a lot earlier than this whole Cascadian nonsense. And, you know, it was just, you know, this was something that organically has been around for 10 years and, not really promoted. It's just beers that people are making. So it really should be a style. And I think Gordon is, you know, we were talking about, you know, chatting up about the whole West Coast Amber thing. So. Hopefully that'll be in the style guide now because it is radically different, and it's just a fantastic beer. You know, malty, caramelly, not too sweet. You know, really really hoppy. You know, not excessively hot bitter. You know, but balancing the malt. You know, tends to be anywhere from, you know, 6 to 7.2 or so in the alcohol. And just, you know, big character beers. So, different than the amber you're going to find most other places. So, there you go. Did that answer the question, or did I go off in a completely different area?
I don't know. I was looking up online how to, you know, throw a stitch, dude. I don't know.
Nice.
All right, another question from the chat. Alan Marks asks, for the next Q&A show, which is now, which is, you know, that's weird, what is the mechanism to reduce diacetyl in bottle conditioning besides time?
Oh, you know, time can increase the diacetyl levels.
Well, it's also on your side.
Time, and it waits for no one.
Is on my side. Yes, it is.
If you put a stitch in it, you save nothing.
So you know, the mechanism to reduce is that, you know, we're all familiar with the yeast-based mechanism to reduce diacetyl or diacetyl, depending
which is?
On the yeast will take in the diacetyl and break down into non-buttery components. But you will get, you can get diacetyl from oxidation reactions. You can get it from, you know.
Infection.
Infection like Pediococcus. So generally, if a beer is in the bottle, it will increase over time because you tend not to have a whole lot of yeast action there. I would say if you do have a beer where the diacetyl wasn't in the beer before and it's increasing while it's in the bottle, I would suspect infection, PDO or something like that. Or, you know, it could be one of the other.
Yeah, and there's no way to get rid of that then.
Right.
Other than if it was extreme aging.
Yeah, if it was strong before and it seems to be reducing in the bottle, I would just keep the bottles, you know, around 60, 65, and hopefully, you know, there's enough active yeast to kind of suck it down. But the important thing is, don't package your beer until it tastes right. So your beer should taste really good in the fermenter before you package it. If it doesn't taste good before you package it, generally, packaging it will do no good for it. Packaging makes beer worse, not better.
Look good. That's about it.
Right.
Yeah.
It'll put it into convenient serving size portions.
Dumping size.
But it doesn't make it taste better. It makes it taste worse.
Right.
So if your beer is not great in the fermenter, bottling bucket, whatever you have, don't waste your time bottling it.
Time won't help.
No.
Yeah. Okay.
Or, you know, condition it in bulk. And decide then.
Okay. Good answer.
Yeah, Palmer?
Yep. And I guess with the slight caveat that it may not be always be worse, it may just end up being different. There are beers that depend on bottle conditioning for signature character of the style.
That's true.
Versus aged, but I think in general you are correct.
That's a good point. I suppose there's varying degrees of good.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Fierce Beard in the chat asks, what about the acceptable haze from wheat as opposed to Trub and Break haze? Do the wheat beers naturally have a shorter shelf life?
Oh, the haze in wheat tends to be protein haze, does it not?
Right. Yeah, that's right. It's protein polyphenol haze, and if you added tannin to the beer, then you could get those proteins to complex and then drop out. So you just have residual protein haze
balancing act.
But you know what, like a German wheat beer, known for short shelf life, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, answers that question.
There you go, in your face, man.
That's
answered.
All from the chat so far. You want to get to some emails or
let's
take a break?
Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll get to your emails after this.
When you hear Blickman Engineering, think innovation, passion, quality, and customer service. Blickman Gear is designed by brewers to give you a sense of pride in your equipment. At Blickman, they know what makes brewing a pain and build gear that makes it fun. Like the intuitive beer gun, a completely different approach to filling bottles. The Therminator wort chiller, a new take on a plate chiller that's sized for flow, performance, and the high groundwater temps homebrewers face every day. The Brewmometer, a brilliant weldless thermometer design with brewing parameters right on the dial. The Auto Sparge, ultimate simplicity for preventing an overflow or running your mash tun dry. And much more, like the modular top-tier brewing stand, conical fermenters, and their Boilermaker brew pots. With more cutting-edge equipment coming soon, keep up with the latest from Blickman at BlickmanEngineering.com and stay on the cutting edge.
Hi, this is Push from the Brewing Network, and I want to tell you about the Brewmaster's Warehouse and how you can get 10% off your next order. I'm a pretty techie guy, but I've never seen an online store like this. It's awesome. Go to brewmasterswarehouse.com and click on Brew Builder. You can whip up a custom recipe so easily even Sven could do it. Seriously, it's slick. You can share your recipe with your own logo and notes to the Brewmasters database if you want. And the best part, it keeps a running tally of the beer you're building while you're doing it. Then, bam, click Buy Recipe and your cart is filled and ready to go with helpful suggestions in case you forgot something. This thing is amazing. Brewmasters Warehouse is run the way a home brewer would do it, with great service, fast turnaround, and $6.99 flat rate shipping. Brewmasters Warehouse and the Brew Builder blew me away. Check it out today at brewmasterswarehouse.com. I'm serious. And don't forget to put BN Army in the discount code box for 10% off your order. Check out brewmasterswarehouse.com. Cheers.
Downtown Joe's, located in the historic Oberon Building in beautiful downtown Napa, California, offers an award-winning brew pub experience from 8:30 a.m. to 1 a.m. every day. For 15 years at the corner of 2nd and Main, Downtown Joe's has been voted best night spot 7 times and best brew pub for the last 4 years in a row. Brewmaster Colin Kaminsky's handcrafted ales, like his Tailwagon Amber Ale and Double Secret Probation IPA, are the perfect accent to Riverside dining, live music, and a relaxing outdoor patio. Don't miss the Beer of the Month, special rotating taps, and the BN Army Member Special. Wear your BN gear, get 10% off your beer. Visit downtownjoes.com to make reservations, peruse their extensive calendar of events, or just read more about their fantastic beers. Come enjoy the fine beer, food, and music. Downtown Joe's, the award-winning brew pub where you'll feel at home.
A heretic is anyone who does not conform to an established attitude, doctrine, or principle.
If you love craft beer, you're already a heretic.
The very first thing we did when we started looking at the beers that we would brew, we got rid of all those recipes. We started from scratch. We've been pilot brewing the most creative things that we could think of and the most interesting things. We've completely gone away from style.
Heretic Brewing Company is opening this spring in Pittsburgh, California, and you can be a part of it. Visit hereticbrewing.com and facebook.com/hereticbrew. Get the latest updates on the brewery and upcoming beers. Show everyone how you celebrate great beer as a heretic.
It's a fairly powerful word. Being a heretic, that means you're not settling for ordinary beer. You are going with flavorful, creative, bold, interesting beers. A heretic is looking for the best beers out there.
Be a heretic. Don't drink ordinary beer. Summertime has arrived, homebrewers, and the fine folks at More Beer are thirsty. With the arrival of summer's heat, More Beer's got you covered with great deals on temperature control and some fantastic lawnmower beer kits. Ranko and Johnson temperature controllers, thermal wells, and thermometers, as well as light and refreshing beer kits you're going to love this hot summer. Stay on top of your homebrew's temperature and keep your kegs topped up, too. Summertime beer and gears from your friends at More Beer and morebeer.com.
Back to the two guys that know how to turn beer into beer. This is Brew Strong. Beer.
Wow, what you don't know about my...
I'm going to go with it, man.
Well, go with this. What you don't know about my good friend, John Palmer. Theme music?
Oh, shit.
God sakes.
All right, hold on.
We came up with theme music. We're going to have to play it every time now. What you don't know.
Here it is. Hold on.
It's time for What You Don't Know About My Good Friend, John Palmer. He once tried out for the part of Doctor Who, but eventually lost to David Tennant. What you don't know about my good friend, John Palmer. All right, back to the show.
That's like a perfect length, Dan.
I know it is. I'm in there too with the timing, huh?
I wasn't talking about the clip.
God. talking about another sponsor again. All right. Email? Questions?
Oh, God, I'm sorry. I'm checking on my horoscope for the day. This one is from Brian. He says, Jamil/John, thanks for the great shows. I have been homebrewing for 2 years and just started to listen to you about a year into it. I learned so much from you. That's all he says, which is weird. Oh, no, there's more. I have a fermentation question. A buddy and I brewed a Janet's Brown Ale. The brewing went as planned, and the OG hit the target. I had to drive my filled carboy home. I got home, and the temperature was controlled at 64 degrees. I rehydrated the 1.5 packages of SO5, which I don't know why there's 1.5.
He's using pitching rate calculator.
Ah.
There you go.
Shit.
MrMulti.com.
Added to the
wort. For all your pitching calculator needs.
He added those to the wort, and signs of fermentation did not start for 48 hours. Will the slow start of the yeast affect the beer? Is this common? Thanks, Brian.
A couple of things. It can affect the beer in a couple of ways. One is if there's contamination, then you've given 48 hours for bacteria and stuff to kind of grow and populate and start to affect things. And the amount of the population of bacteria tends to directly influence the flavor of the final beer. Souring, other funky things like that. The other potential is, letting the wort sit, with oxygen in it for that amount of time. I think you can kind of increase the staling. Look back in the archives for a show on staling. So that's another potential problem. The interesting thing is, he said, so pack and half a dry yeast, and he added it to the carboy. He didn't say whether that was with properly rehydrating the yeast or not. The pitching rate calculator and just common sense will tell you need to, and maybe he did this, is you need to rehydrate your dry yeast before you add it to the beer. The manufacturers for homebrewers, they will tell you, oh no, just sprinkle it on the top. And for the commercial brewers, they will say, oh, you must properly rehydrate the yeast. So somehow they think that the beer that the commercial brewers are making is somehow different than the quality of the beer that homebrewers are making, which really still pisses me off to this day, because we're both trying to make the best beer possible, right? Homebrewers and commercial brewers trying to make the same great beer.
Yes.
So if it's good enough, and there's a lot of things that commercial brewers do that homebrewers don't need to do or don't need to worry about. You're using different kind of fermenters, things like that. But rehydrating dry yeast is definitely one of the things that both, big scale brewers and small scale brewers need to do. So, don't just sprinkle the yeast on there no matter what the manufacturer says. It needs to be properly rehydrated. When you sprinkle the yeast on there, half the yeast dies. So half of the yeast that you've just added is dead and laying on the bottom.
Why? Why is that?
It's osmotic shock. When they are rehydrating the cell walls, they cannot regulate what passes through, and sugars and other compounds pass through that end up killing the cells. If you think about it, it's a pretty magnificent thing to be completely dehydrated, made into Egyptian mummy,
right?
And then add water and come back to life. So
like brine shrimp.
Yeah, like right. Well,
something from outer space monkeys.
You can't dry the actual shrimp themselves; they die.
No.
Yeast are.
I don't know. I can never afford one.
Right. I know what to get you for your birthday then.
A brine shrimp.
Yes. So that's one of the critical things that and maybe you just didn't say but you should rehydrate the yeast. Account for, viability, how old the yeast pack is, things like that. And, if you add the appropriate amount of oxygen, appropriate amount of yeast, properly rehydrated, things like that, should take off in a reasonable amount of time. Doesn't need to take off in 2 hours. If it takes off in, 8, 12 hours, that's fine. Not a big deal.
All right, Palmer, you agree, I imagine?
Yeah, I mean, he could have had a perfectly, you know, sanitary environment that was just a little too cold, and so therefore yeast activity really didn't get up to snuff until 48 hours later. Or it could have been, you know, as Jamil said, half the yeast died upon pitching, and it took 48 hours for them to build up population to, you know, generate sufficient fermentation activity.
All right. This is an email from Andy. He says, recently on the Northern Brewer Forum, also asked on the Brewing Network Forum, I inquired about some basic decanting questions. During the discussion, the legendary Denny Kahn weighed in. He mentioned that it is better to it is better for the yeast to pitch directly from the fridge and straight into the chilled wort at ale temperatures. I listen to BN program every day. I've read the yeast book. No one has ever mentioned this method. Chris White and Jamil say to pitch within 5 degrees of your cooled wort. Denny says studies state that as soon as yeast starts to warm up, that is a bitch of a sentence to say, by the way. Studies state that as soon as the yeast starts to warm up, they start to spend energy built up in their glycol reserves. I may have butchered that.
Sure.
If you wait for it to warm up, it essentially wastes that energy, and it is much better for it to waste it in the wort because it will warm up there anyway. Everything else tells me the yeast will go into thermal shock and become a mess in the finished product. If this is better for the yeast, why do White Labs and White Yeast recommend warming their yeast up? Thanks, Andy.
Yeah, well, see, it's a good question, and the other thing is, all right, so you can do studies, and you can, and I'm not sure what studies you're referring to, but certainly the warmer yeast are, the more energy they expend. Their metabolism increases, and they need to utilize reserves that they have, glycogen, trehalose, things like that, that they store at the end of fermentation, that they build up and use to survive till the next fermentation. So certainly they're going to use that up. It's also true, so if you, it would be a bad thing to warm up your yeast and let them sit there. That's why, like, warm shipping of yeast, things like that, are bad. 2 days spent in shipping pretty much zaps all the reserves that the yeast have. You know, if it's like 90 degrees sat warm, you've pretty much sucked all the reserves the yeast have. That's why when you get a package of yeast at your retailer, you know, hopefully the retailer has, you know, paid a lot of attention to getting the yeast there, you know, in very short order, and, you know, storing it cold immediately when it comes in. I've been to some places where I see a box of yeast sitting there, on a hot day for, you know, it's end of the day. It's like, well, they're too busy to store the yeast. I understand they got customers. You got to take good care of your customers, but I think most homebrew customers would understand. I'm kind of getting off a tangent here. Would understand if you said, I understand you're in a hurry. I want to take care of you, but you know the yeast needs to get cold right away. I mean, you could take that, yeast, put it away first thing the moment it comes in. Don't let it sit there all day, because you're just sucking the life out of the yeast. However, rapid changes in temperature cause the yeast to expend even more energy on expressing these heat shock proteins. And that goes with cooling the yeast rapidly or heating the yeast up rapidly. So that's why you want to be within the 5 degrees. It's a shock to their system. They're trying to defend themselves against these rapid changes to keep from dying. That's why they utilize a lot of energy in that aspect. And it affects future fermentation. So, you know, thinking to yourself, oh, well, you know, I don't want it to sit warm for, you know, an hour or 2 hours as it slowly warms up, and throwing it into the beer instead of the wort instead, you're actually sucking more energy out of the yeast and damaging the yeast that way. So I love Denny. He's a brilliant guy and knows a lot about brewing. But in this instance, I would say he is mistaken. Ooh, is that just like, oh, Denny?
Burn. All right, let's. We have time for another email.
Yeah.
All right, then.
Let's do another.
Jamil and John. I always like reading the intros to these because everyone's so polite. I'm listening through the archives of many brewing podcasts, including Brew Strong, which I thought was the only one, but whatever. He says, you guys rule. At present, I'm only getting about 50% attenuation from pitching Y-Yeast smack packs without making a starter. I think I need to get into making starters and aeration before pitching. I've listened to both Brew Strong episodes on aeration and starters. I heard an interview with John on another podcast. Tisk, tisk, Palmer. Where John...
Slut you.
And I'm not even going to read the name.
What do you know about my friend John Palmer? He's a podcast slut.
Where John said that within 4 hours, the yeast in a spinning starter will absorb all the O2 they are going to absorb for the sterols needed for healthy cell makeup upon reproduction. This got me thinking about aeration of the starter versus aeration of the wort before pitching. If I purge the top of my 1,000-mil starter with O2 and add some Y-yeast nutrient to the starter before sealing and starting the stir plate, do I still need to aerate a 5-gallon batch before pitching? Would purging the empty space be too much O2 in a 1,000-mil flask? I've heard that John never aerates a 5-gallon batch. Does he purge his starters with O2, or is the air from the room enough for the starter? Is there a need to aerate the wort before pitching if the starter is aerated? Thanks for your time and attention. Keep geeking out on beer. Justin and Tasty rule, but not more than JP. He looks like he has a huge wiener. Oh, I can't say that, but I appreciate that.
Oh, sweet.
Heath, thanks, buddy. So what do you think? Do you need to oxygenate if you oxygenate your starters?
I think yes. What do you think, Jamil?
I was going to say the same thing.
But instead you said nothing.
I'll say no. No. You know, the thing is, I actually tried this, and I don't know a lot of homebrewers who have, but you know, I tried growing up enough healthy yeast that in theory you could brew a lager and there would be zero growth of the cells. You had enough healthy cells to completely ferment out this Oktoberfest, right? I did that, and the resulting beer was quite clean and lacked character. I mean, it was just weird.
It was too nice.
I didn't like it. Yeah, it was too nice. It was slightly artificial. And I will never forget that. I was like, you know, somebody told me, oh, you don't have to oxygenate, you know, you don't get oxidation, it'll be really super clean. I'm like, and I don't know that it would always be super clean. I think I got lucky because you could get, you could end up with other problems, but, that kind of taught me that, you know, it's like the thing with, New Belgium adding, olive oil and things like that. It's like, you know, there's a reason why, and maybe people would like it one way or another, but when you do something like that different, I think, you know, the flavor is different enough that people go, it doesn't taste like beer. Yeah. So if you make a lager too clean, it's like if you took, you know, alcohol and malt flavoring and carbonation and blended together, it doesn't taste right. There's these subtle compounds that come from the growth of the yeast in the beer and adding the oxygen and all that. And all that kind of adds up to beer.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Michael Lewis gave a interesting talk at the CBC a couple of years ago in San Diego, where the whole point of his talk was, if you change anything, you've changed the beer. So if you're a professional brewer and you're trying to brew this recipe that your customers expect, and you change something, you've made a different beer.
Sure.
It comes down to, you know, what are your expectations for that batch? Like you're saying.
I was going to ask you, are you going to GABF this year?
No.
No.
No, I don't think Jeez. So.
If you
I would
go,
love to, but...
I got a pass for you.
Oh,
really?
Oh. Use a heretic pass.
My wife has commented that I've used all of my vacation this year for beer things.
For shame.
without the rest of the family. And it's like, well, you can come with. And they're going, ah. So,
well, they don't want to go. That's their problem.
Denver has something for everyone. You just reminded them of that.
Yes. All right. Well, let's take a short break. And when we come back, more of your questions after this.
BN Army Hop Tech has a great discount waiting for you. Do you often find it difficult to find specific specialty ingredients for your homebrew recipes? Well, listen to this. Hop Tech stocks 59 different grains to choose from, 39 varieties of pellet hops, and 8 kinds of whole leaf hops. And Hop Tech not only carries Y yeast and White Labs yeast for you, but also Fermentus, 04, 5, 6, 23, 33, and T58 Belgian yeast, plus Cooper's, Nottingham, and Windsor yeasts. Got your recipe ready to go? Pick up some great brew gear like new long and short sleeved shirts, games, and more. Hop Tech's new website is being updated every day with new items. If you don't see it, call the shop. They're open 6 days a week. BN Army and AHA members get a 10% discount, and active military personnel get 15% off. Visit hoptech.com today for great selection, great service, and a great discount. Hoptech.com.
Pintly is your personal beer connoisseur, and you don't even have to leave a tip. Pintly.com learns your taste in beer. Create a free account today and start by rating a few beers. In just a couple of clicks, Pintly will get to know you and your personal preferences. You won't believe how accurate Pintly's amazing algorithm can be as it learns what pleases your palate most. Personal beer recommendations, tasting notes, and now their new app for your Android or iPhone smartphone. Pintly also gives away incredible prizes each month. Prizes like free craft beer for a year. Visit Pintly.com right now to see how it works or to create your own free account. Pintly, a new kind of beer website that only recommends beer you're sure to love. Pintly.com.
Nico, listen, our lawyers said that we had to do this for 1 hour, and after this, we don't have to talk to each other for 3 more months until the next meeting.
Kids, come on, let's get out of here.
I'm supposed to have more lines. I'm the professional. Hey, it's Sully.
And I'm Nico.
And we opened the 21st Amendment 9 years ago at 563 2nd Street in San Francisco, just 2 blocks from Giants Park, to make great beer and have a great time doing it.
That's right, because to us, the 21st Amendment is more than just the right to make beer. It's the right to experiment, to be innovative, and just do things differently. And so now, we're putting our craft beer in cans.
That's right, cans. You can find our world-famous Hell or High Watermelon Wheat Beer and Brew Free or Die IPA throughout California and Alaska.
And now it's also available on draft at select accounts in the Bay Area.
So next time you're at your local neighborhood pub or good beer store, be sure to ask for 21st Amendment in cans.
Because everyone likes it in a can.
Tasty crack cans.
Tasty crack cans.
Back to your hosts, Jamil Zainasheff and John Palmer. Putting the testicles in technical, this is Brew Strong.
All right, we're back. We're doing a live Q&A.
We sure are. I forgot.
If we got the phones, fine. We'll do phones too.
888-401-2337. Give us a call and give us your best question. I can't even read in this light anymore. All right, this is from Ohio Merb.
JP getting old.
Dude, totally. I need to get glasses on my glasses. Here's a question for an upcoming Q&A show. Hey, guess what this is?
That's what I said. You know, if you like list Q&A in the title?
Done.
I print them out, I hand them to JP, and 3 to 6 months later we get to them.
After I wipe with it. my last 7 batches have had absolutely no head retention. They've all been relatively high-gravity beers, but styles have been all over the place. Stout, spiced amber, imperial, Irish red, etc.
Right.
What really got me thinking that I had a problem was when I re-brewed a favorite house APA, which normally has great foam, but this time I got nothing. Right. Which is the most likely reason? Multiple choice, here we go. I've been adding 2 tablespoons of Irish moss into the boil and just heard on the Brewing Network that this can affect head retention.
True.
Number 2, I used to stir the crap out of it with a paint stirrer, but stopped when I heard you say that I may be, quote, wasting those bubble-forming proteins in the primary.
Sure.
Or 3, something else? I bottle and carbonate, according to Beersmith, has been 2.3 to 2.5 for all the beers. I can't think of anything else that has changed. Same glassware, same washing, same everything as far as I can tell. What do you guys think?
I'll tell you right off. All right.
I say just buy a commercial beer. But that's
initially, you mentioned high gravity. And high gravity isn't necessarily the issue. Our, you know, alcohol itself is not the issue, because you can add pure alcohol to a beer and the head retention's the same. The foam stands the same. That does not affect it. Fermentation of high gravity beers may express, you know, if the yeast or stress may express certain compounds that could affect head retention.
Yes.
Yes. Irish Moss, two teaspoons, did he say? Two tablespoons. Two teaspoons. Makes a big difference. Why are we talking grams
teaspoons.
Here? Two teaspoons. Yeah. Even in a 5 gallon batch, six gallons of boiling wort is not a problem. I believe the great George Fix suggested 2.5 teaspoons was the ideal for his tests or something like that, because I ended up using 2.5 and found no problems whatsoever. I imagine if you went excessive on the Irish Moss, like some people have gone with Whirlflock in the past, making seafood stout, he's not paying attention. He didn't. He
talking
didn't
to me?
Dissing him here in the...
Me?
Yeah.
Why would you diss me? What, are you a listener?
We're talking seafood stout, that's all.
Oh, that's
excessive Whirlflock.
Oh, that's me. Hey, I get it. Jerk.
And
I hate your beer.
Yes.
Yeah.
Unless you really go overboard, I don't think that's the issue. Stirring massively, if you're, some people, it's like, yeah, I ran the paint stirrer for 2 hours. Not a good idea. Once you get past like 15 minutes, I think you're done. I would suspect that there is some sort of a couple of possibilities. One is change in the malt supply. If it's happening to all your beers and everything was fine before, nothing's changed, year to year malt supply, that might be an issue. The other would be some sort of contamination. That would be the other thing I would think of. Other than that, I would think everything else is fine. What would you say, Mr. Palmer?
I agree with all that. I'm trying to think of anything else that may be contributing to it.
Mm-hmm.
But, definitely yeast shock and lipids getting into the beer would really knock it down
right.
quickly.
I mean, if you started repitching and, you're repitching a lot of dead yeast...
Things like that.
A lot of times people will say, oh, nothing's changed. And then you ask a few more questions, now I moved the location where I'm brewing, but it's the same house and same water. And it's like, well, what's changed? It's like, oh, well, now I'm in the garage. I put up a big box fan and it's blowing, dirt from the front yard into my beer. Things like that tend to happen. It's like, there's your change. Mm. So, a lot of times it's things that have changed that you think don't make a difference. And that was the one surprising thing for me. When I started brewing, I wasn't sure what the parameters were that were changing things or that were affecting the brewing. And, very quickly I learned, those things that you think mean nothing actually mean something. And those things that you think mean the world mean absolutely nothing. And sorting through all those things is very difficult. And it takes a lot of time. And because there's a lot of, internet information that, there's a lot of great information. There's a lot of, red herrings where, it's not people trying to be... problems.
Not trying to mislead you or anything.
Right. It's just they've thought that they saw a correlation between this and that. They brewed once and that happened, and they're certain that that's the issue. And it really actually has nothing to do with it. So, you know, those sorts of things. I think, you know, look to what has changed. You know, think, you know, carefully what's changed since those batches that were fine to now. And if you find that absolutely nothing has changed, you know, again, you know, crop year on the supplies, that can have an effect. And although, you know, the maltsters try and protect you from that as much as they possibly can. And the other would be contamination. So, there you go. Hopefully that helps.
It helps me. It helps me a lot. This is from Chris in Pennsylvania. He says, Jamil Jones, I am an all-grain brewer, and I carbon filter my water for brewing. I enjoyed the Kit Beer Show and want to take the challenge. One question I had was related to the water. You mentioned you pre-boil 5 gallons of water before brew day. Instead of boiling... He wrote that in the email. He goes, instead of blah, blah, blah. So I had to read it. Uh-huh. Instead of boiling this, could I just use a quarter teaspoon of metabisulfite the day before to sanitize that filtered water to effectively treat for any spoilage organisms? It sounds similar to what home winemakers do to sanitize their wine must.
Don't do what winemakers do. Oh, please. That's like
the biggest mistake. The metabisulfite doesn't sanitize the water. All it does is pull out chlorine and chloramines.
Well, and there is some...
And there's some oxidation protection.
Right. Which will, you know, and also will, it has some sanitizing properties, but generally it has to be pretty high levels, and it's the free sulfur, like gas and stuff like that, that is...
You need to be at a low pH. That's why the metabisulfite works in wine.
Yeah, you do need a lot of it, and it is very pH derivative, so... you can't just add like a quarter teaspoon in 5 gallons.
Right. Well, you can mix it with acid, do something like that. But yeah, you know, don't try for short. Don't try for shortcuts on sanitizing.
Yeah.
Don't try for shortcuts on fermentation, yeast health. Don't try for shortcuts on any of that stuff. Now, people are spending a huge amount of time worrying about mash pH and worrying about decoctions and, you know, the crush and all this stuff, and it's like that's time wasted. You know, the hot side is very forgiving. You can produce almost anything. I did an experiment when I took pre-hopped canned malt extract, the kind where there's a packet of yeast on the top. And my thought was, you know, the people producing this product know how to make really good beer. So, you know, the difference is it's concentrated down. I took that, poured it in with some boiled water, and I added a really nice pitch of healthy yeast, fermented out well in controlled conditions, and it turned out great. Everybody drank the entire 5-gallon keg in no time. Nobody said anything about extract or cans or hop character or anything like that. They're like, oh, this is nice. So... I didn't do anything as far as producing that wort. You know, I didn't do other than mixing it with boiled water. So don't focus so much on that. Focus on, don't try and do shortcuts on sanitation. Don't try and do shortcuts on fermentation. Don't try and do shortcuts on packaging.
Do shortcuts at your job.
Yes.
Or in your family life.
Nice.
But not with brewing, right? Am I right on that?
I think there's a whole show for you there.
I think that there is. How to get divorced real fast. And I think a lot of guys would actually listen to it.
Yeah.
And go, oh, you know, that's a good point.
JP's rules for life. I think I would listen to it, actually. That's pretty good.
Should, man.
Sweet.
Blobber might call in with a question.
Yes.
He keeps using my Twitter feed for fucking asking me questions. I hate it. Which is probably why he does it.
Just ignore all the questions on Twitter and Facebook.
Yeah,
that's what I do.
But I like...
So if you're like, you know, posting a general question on Facebook, I'm sorry, I don't even like look at the posts anymore. There's way too many. You send me a personal email, I will personally respond to every single one of them.
Well, right. And what I try to do on the Brewing Network Facebook page is people post questions all the time, and it's like, I remove them. I just remove your questions because... Right. We have a forum, and we have half a dozen fucking shows that you can ask these questions in. Don't post them on the
email
Facebook page.
For feedback.
The Facebook page is for us to communicate with you and then for you to post pictures of how cool we are.
Yes.
Right? It's not for me to ask
pictures
you
of you
answer about aeration.
Blowing us, yes.
Yes. All the time.
Kissing ass.
I got to get those developed. Let's find a good one here. Here we go.
Speaking of finding a good one.
Yeah. Is it time for that?
We have a fine sponsor.
Oh, we do.
Let's see. Guys and gals, are you looking to spice things up in the bedroom? Been fantasizing about surprising your lover with an adventurous new toy or adult movie? Well, here's an offer you won't be able to resist. Go to adamandeve.com, and for a limited time only, you will get 50% off just about any item. When you select your one item at 50%, you will also get to receive 3 free adult DVDs of your choosing. It's pretty much any of the DVDs. I'm not 100% sure, but I think that's the case.
Or is it only the ones that you've been in?
It's only ones that I star in. So that limits you to like 300 or 400 of the thousands that they have. For a little inspiration. Plus a free extra gift so central we can't mention it on the radio. If we can get the Woods to call in, they know what this free extra gift is.
We do have some calls.
And to top it all off, we'll even throw in free shipping on your entire order. So check out AdamandEve.com today. They're a sponsor of the show. A lot of folks, they enjoy this sort of thing, and nothing wrong with that. And if you do, go check it out because it's a good sponsor. They got a lot of products. They got they're giving you a smoking deal here. You know, you get the 50% off of just about any one item when you type Jamil, Jamil, in the offer code, and you'll also get the free 3 free DVDs, also a good deal, and the free gift and the free shipping. So, if you enjoy this stuff, check it out. You can't go wrong. Just use the offer code JAMIL at AdamEve.com.
Caller, you're on the air. Who's this?
Hi, this is Andy Wood, a home brewer.
Oh, hello, Mr. Wood. How are you doing today?
Hi, I'm fine. Thank you. Thank you for accepting my call.
You're
welcome.
Long time, first time.
And John.
Yes, sir. What's your question for them? Please don't address them directly, though.
I apologize.
Avert your gaze.
Dear Jamil. Hi, my name is Andy Wood. I've been brewing for approximately 10 years, all grain for the past 6 or so. Recently, I've found that my wife has been brewing a little bit more than me, and her beers tend to win awards, whereas mine don't. My question is this. Mm-hmm. My beers have been brewed through shortcuts, such as dry yeast and whatnot.
Right.
And my question is, I'd like to brew a really good pale ale, and yet I'd only like to do a quick starter to get that beer going and have it be a world-class beer without having to worry about all of this crazy yeast stuff, like in your book. Anyway, I guess my question is, have you ever brewed a beer that you just did from a vial and won an award with? If so, what beer was it, what yeast type, and what would you recommend for someone like me who is currently in a brewing slump? Bye, Andy Wood.
Dear Andy.
All right, good call.
I think you're going about this all the wrong way. What you need to do is teach that wife of yours to brew beer and let you have the credit for it. I think that's your flaw right there. Letting her take the credit for her brewing is like letting her take the credit for having a job, wearing shoes, things like that. I mean, really, just a grand mistake. Teach her what she should really be doing. I think that's where you need to go. But if you insist on...
Sounds like you and I have a show.
Yeah, I think we got it. You know, dick meat and dickhead. We're there. I think that's actually an interesting question. And Andy, again, is very thoughtful in his very sensitive yet sultry way. The types of beers you can do with a single vial, and you want to make sure that the source of your White Labs vial or your YE smack pack is they've taken good care of it, they got it quickly, got it into the fridge quickly, and you have it in good stead. You got it home, you've kept it refrigerated, and if you can make a quick, simple starter from it, just to kind of wake it up before you pitch it, that's good as well. But I would focus on something like an English Mild, an English Ordinary Bitter, a Scottish 60, a Scottish 70. I've won awards on all of those with, a fresh pitch of, Y Yeast or White Labs. So something like that, low gravity ales work well with you know, getting your yeast started. So you know, sometimes you'll be looking at other beers, and what I did when I was in my heyday of competing, I would you know, brew something like an ordinary bitter or a mild to start up my English strain, or I would, you know, start up something, you know, a low gravity beer to start up my strain. And then from that, I got my pitch of yeast that I would divide up into multiple beers, and then I was off and running with enough yeast for everything else. And, you know, if everything else is good and you maintain temperatures carefully, you should be good. And then, you know, Andy, have Kim show you how to do it right, and you should be okay.
Or just help her brew, and then when she enters, put
take
you
credit
down as the assistant brewer.
That's right.
So you both get it.
Rub Kim's shoulders, bring her like a drink, you know.
Yeah.
You
focus know. On what a positive influence you are.
You know, towel off her brow as she's, you know, slaving over the hot brew kettle, and then just say, you know, I helped. I think my name should go on that. And you know, she'll win lots of awards, so. She is one of our master brewers for Can You Brew It, so there you go.
We have another phone caller. Caller, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Blobber.
Hello, how are you guys doing?
Good, how you doing, buddy?
Oh, not bad. I'm just outside because I don't want to wake up the rest of the family.
What is it like, nice. 17 a.m. in Canada?
I don't know. 3 hours later from you guys, whatever the time it is right now.
Be 11:30.
Trying to burn wood.
You're trying to burn
keep
wood.
Myself warm because it's freaking cold out here.
And you don't have electricity up there in Canada?
No, I'm out camping right now, so I'm on vacation.
What are you doing listening to this show?
Well, I like you guys.
Yeah,
I like you guys a lot.
All right, Garth.
All right, so I was just visiting a meadery today, and it was interesting enough. They make a they make kind of a liqueur out of maple water and maple syrup. And what the guy was telling us is they use reverse osmosis on the maple water to concentrate the sugars.
Interesting.
Now, that's what got me thinking. Is
that's fascinating.
I was just wondering how reverse osmosis works. Like I have no clue how that works. So that was my question.
Right.
And how would that work?
Well, so essentially, you have a membrane that's permeable to water. Okay, and all these other compounds are a little bit bigger than the water would be, and so you just you know, force your liquid across this membrane, and the water kind of squeezes out and drips out the other side, and, you know, it's pure, almost pure water. And that's usually what people collect. They use reverse osmosis to get rid of all the minerals and stuff, because the minerals won't fit through the membrane, but the pure water comes out the other side, and that's what they use for brewing or whatever you have. And all the other is just run off as waste. Well, in this case, They squeeze that maple sap across there, the water, you get pure water out one side, or relatively pure water, and then the concentrated maple sap comes out the other end, the waste end, and that's what they collect. That's a brilliant idea, and I think you could even do that with wort or whatever. Let's say you want to concentrate wort. I'm not sure how efficient it would be, but I imagine you could brew beer, or, you know, run a mash, and you know, you could take a mash for, you know, making 6 gallons of mild, run across, you know, through your RO filter, squeeze out the water, and essentially end up with, you know, a couple of gallons of, you know, barley wine or whatever it might be.
Well, I've got one comment on this. That's interesting, but I've talked to Bob Hansen about, you know, malt extracts and production.
Right.
And he actually did an experiment once where he boiled maple sap. Uh-huh. Under a partial vacuum,
right,
and produced a syrup that had very little browning to it.
Sure,
you know, it was.
Oh,
done.
Well, yeah. No, go ahead.
Okay. So, it produced a maple syrup with very light color, very under very low temperature.
Right, right.
You know, not it's kind of intermediate to what Blauber's describing from reverse osmosis. But he said, the end result of that batch was a syrup that really didn't have much maple character to it. And a lot of the maple flavors, of course, are derived from the boil.
The boiling, of an extremely long boiling, concentrating down. However, I think, if you were to take the concentrated syrup and then boil it, you would develop those Maillard reactions and all that, much quicker. So instead of boiling for 12 days. Hours or whatever they do, or overnight, you could probably boil it for an hour or two, and then, you'd have that. And I think it'll also work for, a variety of other, whatever it might be that you want to concentrate. So that's actually, a fascinating idea. I'm not saying it's perfect, but I think that's actually, something I've learned.
Mm-hmm.
Look at that. Blauber feeding me information, something I've learned.
Wow. Well, who would have ever thought?
Yeah, I was quite fascinated when I saw it, too. Huh. I just thought of the potential that, you get, it's not adulterated or anything, it's just pure.
Right. But like John's saying, a lot of what the maple character is in so many things is, the cooking process and that formation, Maillard reaction. That is everything that we really love about food, and a lot of about cooked food is that, that Maillard, development. Yeah. It's, otherwise it's like fresh vegetables, fresh fruit, but everything else, we love it cooked. And the reason we love it cooked is because it develops those flavors. Same thing for barbecue and all that. But I will tell you, Blauber, next time, I'm willing to be handcuffed to you. I think you have a lot of interesting thought in you, and I'd be willing to be handcuffed to you and hear that for...
That's the weirdest compliment ever.
Yes. Well, last time I refused, but I think I would.
I am a soft shell.
Okay, sure are.
Guys. I wish to squeeze your soft insides. Yes.
All right. Take care.
Thanks, buddy.
Bye.
I think I freaked out Blauber.
I think you did. Not nice. Easy to do, man.
All right. Well, on that disgusting note, let's take a short break. We'll be back after this.
When Blickman Engineering set out to design a great brewing stand, they knew it had to be strong, adaptable, and last for a lifetime. The top-tier brewing stand is now proudly available at BlickmanEngineering.com. It grows with your brewing skills and equipment. Start with 5-gallon coolers on its heavy-gauge stainless steel shelves. Then move all the way up to 30-gallon pots on the high-output burner tiers. Speaking of burners, the custom Blickman Engineering top-tier burners are extremely powerful, efficient, and amazingly quiet. They have safety stops to center your pot, and they'll last a lifetime and won't rust. The top-tier brewing stand allows virtually infinite combinations from traditional gravity systems to two tiers to completely horizontal. Configure your stand the way you want and have the freedom to change it at any time in the future. Your brewing stand should adapt with you, not force you to learn a new process. Visit BlickmanEngineering.com today to configure your top-tier brewing stand and to find a local Blickman retailer. You'll be surprised with all the flexible features and the competitive price. Start brewing with Blickman from the top tier.
In a world where everything has been lost.
What happened to the city? It's in ruins.
Only one man has the ancient knowledge to restore civilization.
I need a drink. Oh no, the liquor store has been ransacked.
You looking for beer, stranger? Boy, all the liquor got drunk up in the first 25 minutes of the apocalypse.
Wait, there's still some bottles over... Oh, no. Those are non-alcoholic beer.
I reckon you better stick to arrowroot tea and a desperate nomadic existence like the rest of us.
People, I'm a home brewer. I know how to make alcohol.
Oh, it can't be done.
Come with me if you want the beer. Okay, I'm gonna need some big plastic buckets.
He is the chosen one. The prophecies say that he's going to get us wasted.
Someone start heating water. And
from the creators of Northern Brewer, the people who brought you $7.99 Brew Saver shipping, massive selection, and superior customer service comes the Home Brewer.
Hi, I'm Jamel Zanishev, and in addition to my work on the Brewing Network, I write the style profile column in every issue of Brew Your Own magazine.
Hi, I'm Sean Paxton, and when I'm not prepping for the Home Brewed Chef on the Brewing Network, you can find me writing articles on how to cook with your home brew for Brew Your Own magazine.
Greetings, cretins. This is John Palmer, and when I'm not writing for Brew Your Own, I'm reading it.
John Palmer, Sean Paxton, Jamil Zainashev. If you love listening to them on the Brewing Network, you'll love reading their articles, tips, and recipes in the pages of Brew Your Own magazine. Join Jamil, John, and Sean 8 times a year in Brew Your Own. And when you subscribe to BYO on the Brewing Network website, half of your subscription price goes right back to the BN to support great beer and food programming. So sign up for Brew Your Own magazine through the BN website today so you can listen and read your way to better homebrew.
Hey, what are you doing, man?
Writing a review of WLP 400.
What? You're reviewing yeast?
Yeah. White Labs has home brewer reviews of all their strains. Are you new to these interwebs? Check it out.
That's awesome.
White Labs, your source for great yeast, invites all brewers to visit whitelabs.com to read and write your own reviews of all their yeast strains. Get real-world tips and tricks from other brewers who have made the most of their vials and post your own experiences. It's another way White Labs brings you closer to the best yeast on the planet.
And send. There you go. You misspelled flocculate, dude.
What?
White Labs. It's all in the vial.
Back to the beer guys that make other beer guys look like wine guys. Brew strong.
Right. Oh. We're back.
We're doing Brew Strong.
We are doing Brew Strong.
Sponsored by our fine friend, Mr. John Blickman. BlickmanEngineering.com. Check it out. He's paying for the show, so you don't have to.
Yet.
Yet, bitches. Yeah, no.
This one's about keg priming. This is from Dan from Joyzy. Hey, guys. Love the show and learned a lot. I know you guys don't really advocate naturally carbonating in kegs with prime sugar or DME, but I want to give it a try anyway. I get
well, the hell with you then.
I love that statement, but I want to do this anyway.
Why are you emailing us?
Are you a home brewer?
Jesus.
Which is fine. Great. Do it.
Yeah.
I get conflicting information on how much priming sugar to use when kegging, anywhere from half as much to the same weight as when bottling. I really can't find a definitive answer to this question. It's either, quote, I've heard use X amount less, or they state it as a fact without giving a reason. Can you help out a fellow brewer?
Well, I know the answer to this.
What is it?
But, you know, and as you turn off my mic, you know, the reason people think that you would do less or, you know, more or something like that is because, you know, when you're dealing in bulk and you, you know, individually, you know, fill those bottles and you drive off the CO2 that's in there, the great thing that my buddy John Palmer has is the ability to take into account the CO2 that is in the beer in bulk. And if you transfer that to a keg, you retain most of that CO2. Then, you know, use his nomograph, and you've got the right amount of priming sugar, and it'll carbonate perfectly. If you're going to transfer to bottles, you tend to drive off a little bit of that CO2. The beer tends to warm up as you're doing that whole rigmarole. Then you're going to need a little bit more sugar. But that's the reason why people say you need a difference in sugar. It's not like some magical, mystical thing. It's just physics. So, Mr. Palmer, you explain how that whole thing works?
Well, yeah, that is a big chunk of it. The efficiency of bulk fermentation, like you say, is, you know, you don't drive off as much. The amount of CO2
there still, you know, versus being, you know, racked around,
right, and foaming and so on. The amount of headspace in the keg also contributes an efficiency to the process. That is, you get different partial pressure above the liquid in the keg than you do in the bottle. So
although you get you get less headspace in the keg than you do in all your individual bottles.
Right.
They add up to far more headspace.
Yeah. So I have not done priming in the keg in maybe 15, 20 years. So I forget how what my efficiencies were. Mm-hmm. But
I would stick with your nomograph on carbonation and the amount of sugar. Yeah. I think it's 100% accurate, especially when you're looking at a still beer after fermentation. Mm-hmm. You're not shaking it around, driving off the carbonation. So look at the temperature, and that still beer, that's the amount of carbonation that's in it. At that point, if you gently rack it to a keg, and you add the amount of priming sugar that the nomograph suggests, you will get the right amount of carbonation, assuming your yeast is still active, which it should be. Mm-hmm. Eventually, over time, you will get to the proper amount. Mm-hmm. If you rack it to a bucket with some sugar and you swirl it around trying to mix the sugar in and you
drive off the CO2 that's in there.
Right. Yeah. And the bucket's warmer than the fermentation was, and then you go into these bottles, one at a time and all that stuff, you're going to need a little bit more sugar to get that same level of CO2. It's not a lot, depending on, how you treat it. If you mistreat it, you're going to need a lot more, and then maybe that's where people say it's half. Generally, I'm like a 10% guy, but then I tend to be, fairly gentle with that sort of thing.
Heard that.
All right. Yeah. We actually have a bit of feedback from the last Q&A show.
Oh, Jesus Christ. If it's good feedback, read it. We're the opposite of the Sunday session.
We
don't hear bad feedback.
That's right.
Edit that stuff out.
There's never been bad feedback.
Right.
Except what I give you early in the morning. He goes, JP, from Bike Foolery, by the way. Last Q&A shows, he was having some problems with contamination. And he says, a happy ending of the last Q&A shows. I have been able to chase the infection out of the brewery.
Nice.
Thanks to you and the boys. Last brew day, the forced ferment test, final gravity was the same as the finished beer. No off flavors equals yay.
All right.
Wort stability test showed nothing growing after a week for the same beer.
Nice. So what was the issue?
I don't remember the issue. I think he had some contamination point, and he was trying to figure it out.
No.
I think he replaced.
I understood that part, but I was asking him, what did he isolate the issue to?
I didn't know you were asking me.
Since he's in the chat, did he figure out what it was, or he tried just like massive sanitation and
I don't know, call
replacing
up,
and stuff? I'm curious.
Yeah, give us a call. 888-401-2337.
We all learn from that. But that's great. Those tests, forced ferment and wort stability test, those two, really easy to do. I know it costs you maybe 2 liters of wort, maybe a little less than that.
Yeah.
You need enough to be able to do a hydrometer test, which is about, hydrometer test is usually about 250 mils. So, a half liter of each. Let's say, 1 liter of beer, just, when you do your recipe, calculate it out to give yourself another liter or whatever, go ahead and do it. And you'll be surprised at the information that you can glean from that and what that's going to tell you about your beer, what it's going to tell you about your fermentation and your process. It's, real simple to do and real valuable information.
Do you really need to do a full hydrometer reading? I mean, if you use a refract, I know you're not going to get exact numbers, but at least you're going to see if it changes or not, right? And that's all you're really looking for, right?
For the stability test, I suppose you could. You know, the hydrometer just, you know, a little bit more reliable, I think. You know, just because, you know, refractometer should be. But yeah. I've just seen so many weird refractometer readings. I don't know.
He said he cannot call in. He has a new kid on his lap. So he did say he replaced
what?
All of his cold side plastic, better bottles, all that kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
And he was still having a problem. So
right.
We suggested a few things, one of which was the Force Wort test. And I don't know. He tossed all his plastic, and I guess that was it. He didn't know exactly where it was. But
right.
Just got rid of everything, and
cool.
It worked. So.
Yeah.
Well,
cool.
Well, that worked out.
Yeah. Spider Wrangler in the chat says, Gordon Strong talked about filling his bottles higher than normal. Shaking a bottle with more headspace causes more agitation and sloshing. So would filling really high improve the travel transportation ability of a keg filled with beer?
No.
Okay.
Doesn't make any difference. I mean, if you're talking about, like, you're going to quarter fill a keg and shake the daylights out of it, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, it's not going to be. It doesn't make any difference, please.
All right.
I mean, you know, it's. I mean, what would you say, John? You know, if you're filling up, you've got an inch and a half of headspace or half an inch of headspace?
Yeah, I don't think so.
And what's, you know.
It sounds to me like we're talking just about, you know, normal 12 ounce bottles,
right.
You know.
Right. If
filling
you're.
Up to the top or, you know, an inch down.
I mean, even if you're filling it with oxygen in mm-hmm. that headspace, it's going to absorb it anyways. It's not going to make any difference. I think the only potential would be, you know, possibly, you know, head-forming proteins. But even then, I challenge anyone to grab a 12-ounce bottle with even a low fill and shake it enough to affect head retention.
Yeah.
No, that just doesn't make sense.
Okay. Here's a three-parter, if you're up for it. They're all pretty good questions. This is from Jody. Dear Jamil and John, I have used wheat DME for my last couple of starters, as that is all I had. Is there a preferable DME to use for starters?
The important thing is to use maltose for starters. So the sugars that have been created need to be maltose. You don't want to use simple sugars for your starters because the yeast quickly become lazy mm-hmm. and don't produce all the necessary enzymes and everything to ferment maltose. And so as long as it's maltose, it could be rice syrup, which tends to be 80% maltose.
Yeah.
You know, you could use that.
So wheat DME is fine, though.
Yeah, it's fine.
Okay.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about that.
He bought one of those foam cap stoppers from Northern Brewer to put in his Erlenmeyer flask.
Yeah.
How should he be sanitizing it? He says, I've been soaking it in star sand with no problems so far.
No, you need to heat sandy those.
Okay.
Those foam stoppers, if it's the ones, I don't know what Northern Brewer exactly is selling, but
yeah.
The ones that I've used in the past, they are meant to be autoclaved. They have a lot of little nooks and crannies in them.
Yeah.
So they, you know, it's kind of like a big bubble, you know, foam thing, and there are a lot of nooks and crannies in there. I would not feel safe sanitizing those chemically. You could drop them into boiling water, and that is okay. Just get them hot to boiling, and that's, you know, not sterile. But that's sanitized, and that should be okay. You know, put them in like little jars, and pressure cook them 250 at for 23 minutes, and they're sterile, and then you can use them.
All right. Last question. I have a chocolate Labrador Retriever. Is Cadbury a good name for him?
That's a pretty good name.
Yeah. He says, I hope so, because that's been his name for 14 years.
All right.
So there you go.
Well, the only name I like better than Cadbury is Stains.
That's true.
Because then you can say, come Stains.
Or Palmer Stains.
Yes. All right. Another fine show, another fine Q&A episode, and,
Look forward to another one this weekend.
Yeah, lick forward. this weekend. Actually, Blickman, Palmer, and Kevin the Drake, our winner of the Blickman contest, is going to be here in the studio live Saturday, the... What day is that? 19th? 20th?
19th.
Sure. 19th. Yeah. No, I think it's
20th. 20th, whatever. Saturday, about 1 p.m. Pacific, and we're going to do three live shows here with those guys, and it's going to be a lot of fun. We're really going to enjoy that. In the meantime, check out our sponsor page, the BlickmanEngineering.com. Check them out. Send John Blickman an email. If you see him at an event, walk up to him and say, John, thank you very much. Shake his hand. And when he says, for what? Just say, Bruce Strong. And, or his good looks. Either or. It's fine. And check out the Brewing Network store. Check it out, thebrewingnetwork.com/store. There's books, there's shirts, there's hats, there's glassware, there's all sorts of goodies in there. And when you buy that stuff, it goes to the bottom line of the Brewing Network. There's not some agency taking a massive cut. It all goes to Justin and his vacation fund. It's good stuff to keep the Brewing Network on the air. So check that out. And if you please, check out John Palmer's How to Brew. That's an excellent book with lots of great information. If you don't have it, you should. I mean, don't even email me a question unless you've looked in How to Brew. All right? If you looked at How to Brew, then you can email a question. Till then, Bruce Strong.
Bruce Strong, everybody.